This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Lickety-split fashion.
That's what they call me on the beat. Lickety-split.
Lickety-split Weeder.
Dan Weeder.
We'll mention this mainly because Chicago Tribune writer Dan Weeder said we would mention this nugget.
Bears beat report. An enterprise writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Got a better chance of getting a pony for Christmas next year.
One of these years, by the way, I'm going to get you a pony for Christmas just so that you can up that probability.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
Really did a good job following the board, kind of letting it talk to us.
I mean, sometimes the board says things to you that you weren't expecting it to say. You know, it's kind of like a wife. And so, like, you got to listen to what it says and then follow its orders.
Dan Weeder.
Go ahead, Dan.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love when we get an opportunity to talk with Dan Weeder. You should check him out in the Tribune. He's doing a great job covering the Bears there. He also does the Take the North podcast. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today, CircaLasVegas.com. Sarah Spain is in for Matt Spiegel. Cassie Carlson is going to actually join us in the 5 o'clock hour, and we'll talk with her a little bit about the Bears as well. Weedsy, thanks for joining us. Before I get to, like, the Caleb stuff real quick, would you just share, like, an update on what you're hearing about Arlington Heights and now apparently other suburbs continue to try and jump into this when it seems like all of this is over with?
Well, look, I mean, there is a lot that still needs to be done to figure out the financial logistics to all this, to figure out the infrastructure logistics to all this, to figure out the government involvement in all this. And so I think this thing is going to remain fluid for a while. I think Kevin Warren's grand aspirations of having a shovel in the ground this year are going to take some urgency. And there's going to need to be some things that happen here in the coming weeks and months to make something like that happen. But I would just buckle in because it doesn't feel like there's a ton of week-to-week clarity on the direction of things. I would still put my money on everything landing in Arlington Heights eventually, but a lot of obstacles to get around before we get there.
Including OTAs, which you've been at. I'm curious what the biggest difference is for you just watching this year versus last year. The difference between Ben Johnson OTAs and what we saw with Flus.
Yeah, I don't love comparing, Sarah, but I will say that the thing that is readily apparent about Ben Johnson through all the interactions and times we've been able to watch him on the field at this point is that he is no joke when it comes to demanding that the details be handled. And if they're not, he's going to call it out quickly, emphatically, and sometimes intensely. There was a moment in yesterday's practice where the first unit offense came out of the huddle a little sloppily. They weren't exactly going through the pre-snap procedure the way they needed to. And he raised his voice, used some choice words and said, get back in that huddle and figure that out again, because we're not going to do that. And I do like that little edge that I think the young quarterback in particular needs, and the whole group as a whole needs to understand what it takes to play consistently high level competitive football in the NFL. And so every little thing matters, and he's not going to let it go, even though it's just a Wednesday, May OTA practice.
I wonder if that's part of what is necessary here. And we talk a lot about culture. And as Bears fans, I think we're trying to understand how you could be consistently bad across multiple different front offices, GMs, coaches, quarterbacks, while other teams somehow have this string of success, even as the decades move on. Like, what is happening there? And I remember having Sam Acho on my old show, like, years and years ago when he left the Cardinals to come to the Bears. And I asked, what's the biggest difference? Like, when you come to the Bears, can you feel the stink? Like, what's happening? And he said he felt like the players accepted losing, that there was just a vibe that they were used to it, and it didn't feel that necessary, that urgent to change it. Is it possible to, with the change of coach or change of regime, actually impact a space that has been this stuck in the mud for this long in a meaningful way? Is it even possible? It doesn't feel like it after all these years.
I mean, man, I hope so, right? Like, I'm going on, I think this will be season 13 for me. I have yet to cover a playoff victory. I mean, that's sad in a league that has a revolving door of playoff teams and wants to create the parity. I do think you speak to something there that is about standards. It's about what you're willing to accept, what you're willing to push for. The Bears have to figure out what that is. Urgency is part of that. Bringing in the right people is part of that. And then just elevating what you accept on a day-to-day, hour-by-hour basis is a big part of this equation. I've said it for a decade now. Like, this is a cutthroat, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. You have to understand what waters you're swimming in, right? Like, and if you're going to swim in those waters and you're going to be successful swimming in those waters, you need to know what it takes. And I think Ben and, you know, with the help of Ryan, with the help of Kevin, with the help of some of these assistant coaches and the players they're bringing in are going to try their hardest to get this back to a place where you guys remember the, you know, the run in 2005 and 06. There was an impact from Lovie. There was a core group of leaders that didn't accept failure or mediocrity, and they pushed and they got themselves going in the right direction.
We're not going to settle for 10 wins. We want 5.
Right? Like, and so here we go. So, like, you got to get it changed. I do think that Ben has the edge to not settle, and he's going to have to keep that edge pretty sharp for a while to get this thing off the ground.
Dan, I found myself in over the last couple of weeks, whether it's Seth's piece or Albert Breer, I found myself going back over last season and with new eyes and being like, oh, that moment meant something. And there was one in particular that at the time I had the similar feelings, and now there's some confirmation bias to it. And that moment for me was when Caleb brought up Lincoln Riley. And I remember saying to Speaks, like, he's crying out for help. And he's trying to figure out anyone who can help him from a football standpoint. Was there any moment that now, with context, that with that notebook that's full of yours, of all of these moments, that now you go back and you go, oh, yeah, now this makes sense of when it happened last year?
I burned that notebook on January 10th. I couldn't look at it anymore. there was too much in there.
He ran out of pages. There was a page for each sack, and he ran out.
It was tough. I will say this on a present day way to answer that question. We heard from Case Keenum yesterday in the media room, and it was a voice of a guy who wasn't here last year, right? Veteran guy in the quarterback's room that can be a resource for Caleb. And Grody and I played a cut on the podcast that we recorded today where Case kind of details all of the things that you have to be responsible for as a forward-facing franchise quarterback in a market like this. And it's everything. It's like understanding what your footwork needs to look like, what your pre-snap procedure needs to look like, what your body language needs to look like, what the recognition of defense needs to look like, what leadership needs to look like. And this checklist, it's like 35 boxes long. And I think there's this recurring drumbeat of getting Caleb to understand just how long that checklist is and how you can't take a day off from checking all those boxes. And so that's the process that's underway here. I am still fascinated to see how quickly, if at all, it clicks between Caleb and Ben, and whether Ben's methods of trying to get results will be methods that Caleb responds to, and how each of them will have to kind of compromise and evolve to make that relationship work. I mean, we're in a really real infant stages of those two guys forming a bond, and it's going to be interesting in the months ahead to see how that goes when the first loss occurs, when the first terrible week of training camp occurs, when you have a stretch where you get beat 3 out of 4. Like, there's a lot that's gonna escalate and intensify, and they're gonna have to figure out a way to be harmonious in that relationship. Otherwise, we're all doomed.
We're talking to Dan Wiederer. I was listening to The Score yesterday, and I have to say I disagreed with Mully. He said it was unlikable when the Bears complained last year, and I get it. You don't always want guys going public with what's wrong. But to Lawrence's point, some of those were very clearly cries for help that they didn't get that help till much too late. And I don't think we addressed enough last year just how disruptive it is to have multiple head coaches, multiple coordinators get sacked every other play. We talk a lot about quarterbacks seeing ghosts, but what about hearing ghosts? Is this team going to be able to start the season not carrying the weight of last year's criticisms, not carrying the weight of, if you don't look different right away, we're going to be certain that we're doomed for another failure of a season? How do you, as players, refresh that part of yourself and come back in with hope and enthusiasm? Because that's tough for a quarterback, but it's tough for a whole team that last year everybody was hyping at the start of the season because of the weapons, and pretty soon we realized wasn't going to do what we hoped.
part of this is you need to lean on the people that weren't here because they don't carry that baggage with them into the season. And so there's a fresh start with this coaching staff. There's a fresh start with some of the veterans and the newcomers that they've brought in to this roster. And you, so you use that as a natural reset. And then the guys that were here have to be able to understand some of the warning signs that popped up last year that they weren't quick enough to address, and they've got to address them more quickly. We went into the season last year with 8 captains. Not a lot of them had experience in that role. Like DJ Moore had never been a captain before, and when he was named a captain, seemed a little bit, you know, unsure of what that meant. Caleb's a rookie quarterback trying to figure a lot of things out. Suddenly he's a captain. You know, you've got guys on defense. Kevin Byard is a good captain who's been around the league for a long time. But you're trying to figure out who your voices are, who your tone setters are, who your leaders are, and the guys that you're going to lean on when things get a little bit turbulent. They've got to figure that out as well. As much as anything, and we can talk about 365 subplots that are all relevant to the Bears, but the plot that means everything is whether Caleb can become what the Bears thought Caleb could become when they drafted him 1-1, and that starts with what Ben Johnson's vision for him is and how he can connect with him. And so every single week we're going to have to revisit that, and where are we in the evolution of that, and where is it, what's the progress report look like, and how healthy is it this week? And so that's going to be an ongoing process, because if everything else goes according to plan, but Caleb doesn't get himself launched properly, then we're right back in the same cycle that we've been in for 40 years.
So we don't get to talk to Dan like every week here on Spiegel and Holmes, but every time I talk to him over the last couple of months, if I see him in the hallway or if he was in the performance studio doing the podcast, I've asked this question, and I still have to ask this question. Where's Braxton Jones?
Yeah, I mean, he's speaking recovering from a very significant season-ending ankle injury that required surgery. And the Bears were pretty forward early on and saying, like, this is going to keep him out for a while. He won't be back on the field until there's an opportunity to get into training camp. And that's going to be the earliest time that we see him back out there. And so you guys understand the stakes of that. Now you have to be creating contingency plans, which they did via the draft. You have to figure out what it looks like as you're setting your offensive line. And for right now, they're trying to figure out who's going to play left tackle in week one. Maybe Braxton Jones gets himself healthy. Maybe he comes back and reclaims that job. But right now, you're seeing a little bit of a mix between Ozzie Trapillo, who I think is the preferred starter there, and Karan Amagaji. And then if ultimately they've got to troubleshoot and send Darnell right over there to take some reps and see what that looks like, they'll do that as well. But that's the one spot in your line that you don't feel great about here in the end of May. And they're going to have to get that figured out as they wait to see what Braxton's recovery looks like.
I always worry when it in football offices, when it's my guy, your guy type thing. How can Karan Amagaji compete, considering that clearly he's Ryan Poles' guy, but not necessarily Ben Johnson's?
Well, he can compete by putting forth a really, really strong training camp, which he didn't have a year ago, right? Like, he missed the entire preseason as he was coming back from his own college injury. And so he didn't play at all during the preseason, did not take a single rep during training camp. When we get into August and the pads come on and the offensive linemen are asked to show this coaching staff what they're made of, Karan Amagaji's got to put his best foot forward. One-on-ones, team drills, all the things that go with that. He can compete, and that door is open. I will say that they used a second-round pick on an offensive tackle for a reason, because they feel like Ozzie Trapillo could help them fill a need, and they're going to give him every opportunity to fill that need as soon as he's ready to do so. And so that competition will escalate when we get into August, and every day along the road to there, Karan Amagaji's got to be preparing to be ready for when those moments come.
I know it's very early and it's hard to tell during OTAs or even training camp what's going to happen when the actual games start, but how do you feel about the trenches on both sides? That is the hardest part of the game for me to look at, especially when you're bringing players from a different system and a different team and you're putting them all together. How enthusiastic are you about this being a different look, both for Caleb in terms of coverage and sacks and also the defensive line and putting pressure on other teams?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
you feel so much better about the starting interior offensive line. And that's a great place to be. Now, we've all seen how much depth on the offensive line is consistently tested here in Chicago, and they're going to have to continue figuring out what that depth looks like when we get into the regular season. They're going to have to figure out who starts at left tackle and how ready they are to start at left tackle when the season begins. The defensive side of the ball is a little bit of a different animal, and I can't wait to get into training camp and start watching some of the competitive practices where Dennis Allen is able to put his fingerprints and his stamp on how they want to play defense. Because I want to see what, Montez Sweat in his second full year as a Bear looks like. They paid him a lot of money to be an every quarter difference maker. He's got to be an every quarter difference maker. I want to see Jervon Dexter take the next step forward. I want to see that Grady Jarrett still got a ton of gas left in the tank, because his passion and his leadership and his juice should resonate as long as he's still a really good football player. And then you want to see if Odangbo is the guy that can complement Sweat on the other side, if Austin Booker can take a step forward. I've got a lot more questions than answers right now on the defensive line, but I do think that they've got some things in place that I'm curious to look at once we start getting into those more meaningful parts of training camp.
So Craig Counsell's on the show every couple of weeks, and his son is playing in the Super Regionals for the University of Kansas, even though it's KU. Anyway, and he's a baseball dad, and he told us yesterday that he's thinking about, if they advance, that Monday is an off day and he'll go watch his son play. You're out here coaching 12U ball, Dan Weider? Is that what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Coach Dan is reeling today. We had a rough loss at Lake Villa last night, a walk-off loss with Coach Dan's son on the bump to end it.
And, oh, no.
Those are the types of ones that the car rides are a little heavier on the way home. We've got a great group of kids. Right now, the production and effort that they're putting forward isn't being matched by the end of game results. And it stings a little bit. I'm going to give a shout out here to our two coaches. Our head coach is named Griff Delaney. He's in school at Loyola. My current joke is that he and my son in 20 years are going to be running the Padres, because they're just so smart about baseball at a young age and have such great emotional intelligence. And then our other assistant, Chris Konasek Lawrence, is like a day one big time loyalist of the score. And so he's probably listening now. He's always listening, and he's always joking that I need to talk less Bears and I need to talk more 12U Glenview Patriots. And so here we are,
Coach P1,
talking about that rough walk-off loss last night in Lake Villa.
So look, I'm always fascinated by when we get parents who coach their kids. And I had the absolute joy of seeing my buddy Jay Zawoski, his lovely wife Hope. They have been coaching their daughter in softball for forever, and now she's in high school, so they had to hand her off to the coaches there. But watching games with them was stressful for me as they're watching their daughter play.
Don't come see me then.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Of where does dad and coach, where do they mesh, and where do they fall apart?
That's a hard one. I live and die on every pitch, and I will admit, people have called me intense, but it's intense in a way where it's just I really care about the group that we coach and getting them to see the results. And so I'm just into it on every pitch, and it's probably a little much. If you want to have my wife on one day, you could probably unpack that to a level that everyone wants to get to. So the Shires, right? Like John Shire's parents told me years ago that on the way home from games, when John was in youth sports, they made a deal that they would never talk about the game during the car ride home. It would just be a nice conversation. If anything came up about the game, it was like, hey, what was your favorite play? And it was all positive, and you do that. I said, man, that's great. I'm going to apply that. I've tried to apply that for like 5 years. I can't do it. I get in the car and I'm like, I'm not going to talk about this game. I'm not going to talk about this game. And I'm like, what'd you miss the cutoff throw? You had the guy. You got to know where the cutoff is. And I can't control myself. And so God bless my son, who's a sponge. He's a very patient, resilient kid for putting up with me. But it is a journey, Lawrence. And when you're as passionate about it as I am, sometimes it goes a little bit to the emotional drain part of things, particularly when you lose 6-5 in extra innings. Can I give you a baseball scenario from last night that I kicked myself for not thinking of in real time?
Sure.
All right. So it's the bottom of the seventh inning. The winning run is on third. It's a tie game. The winning run has just gotten to third in a scenario that he should have never gotten to third, but he's there. The 8 hitter out of 12 is coming up to the batter's box. What are you doing if you're a manager there?
How many outs?
There's one out.
Okay. And what am I going to do? I'm letting him, I'm asking him to take a couple or take one.
We're in the field.
Oh, you're in the field. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm pinching the defense because we're trying to cut off the winning run from scoring.
Right. Or do you want to walk him and set up a double play?
So this is, Sarah, this is where my brain got to at like 12:15 last night when I was tossing and turning in bed. I was thinking, man, like we could have intentionally walked the next two guys, loaded the bases to put a force everywhere.
And
then you're also bringing up the 10 and 11 hitters in the order, giving your pitcher, who happened to be my son, a little better opportunity to get those guys out. As it stood, the game ended on a sacrifice fly to right, made a nice catch in right, made a throw home. It was high and wasn't there in time. And then you're just like, man.
All right, let me right step there. In here for a minute.
Please. Just
as someone who doesn't have kids, let me give you advice on being a parent. I just want to say this, and I'm sure you know this. You just have to keep checking in with your son and making sure the current arrangement is serving him and making him happy. Because I had parents that were maybe a little too, they didn't really care about sports, but they were very supportive. They would drive me everywhere, but they didn't really know much about anything. So I kind of had to make it for myself. But my sister and I both played Division I sports in college. So it worked out, right? They were like, we'll support you doing whatever, but we're also not going to talk to you about it because we don't know what's going on. My mom would just yell 3 seconds all the time. That was like her go-to because I was in the paint and she always thought it was 3 seconds on the other team. But I also know people whose parents are so invested and it helped them. They get them the side coaches and the private lessons and the whatever, and it really elevates their game. There's such a fine line between being the parent that makes your kids stop loving it and being the parent that helps them. And I know your kid knows that you know sports. That's your whole life. Just keep checking in and making sure the current arrangement is the right one, because that driving home and talking about it and putting yourself to sleep thinking about scenarios to win a 12U game is making me think that eventually this won't be the best situation.
Maybe I haven't presented it quite possibly.
No, I think it's pretty clear.
Well, we've got a good idea of what's going on over there with Camp Weederer. They got going on over there.
There's two things I'll say. Every one of these games now is recorded on Game Changer, right? It's the crazy world of technology that we live in now.
And poor kids.
So when you go back through them, you can review your own reactions to things and be like, okay, I got to tone that down. You know, watch the film.
You're watching your body language?
Yeah, so Ben Johnson's got you watching
Ben
body
Johnson's
language
got
too.
You watching film.
But at the same time, I will say this, that one of the reasons I'm so into it is because he's so into it. And baseball is his passion. He loves it. You would be shocked at the number of accessories he has, from the eye black to the arm sleeve to the, you know, this and that, because it's built on the juice that he has for the game. He's got a really, really advanced understanding of the game that doesn't come from anything I've taught him. It's just kind of innate. And so I'm just along for the ride, trying to do whatever I can to help him maximize it. And that's the fun part for me, as it is with all the other 11 kids on the team too. Like I said, it's an incredible group of kids, a great group of families. And you just want them to be able to feel that high of success as often as possible, because man, there's nothing better than the opposite of that car ride home last night when you're coming home after a big win and being like, this is the stuff.
Sarah, do you think, are you feeling what I'm feeling right now, where we were his therapist today?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because I think that's okay. Yeah. I like Dan.
I also relate. Like, that's who I would be, which is why it would be a real problem for me. I'm so stinking competitive with my niece. My niece is actually Glenview. My niece lives in Glenview. She's went to the World Championships in Ninja Warrior. And she went to state for her age group, actually an age above what she is, in like 7 events. She's a little amazing superstar. And I'm glad I get to drop in and root for her and then leave, because I would be exactly like Dan. Which is why I'm saying, as someone who can relate, just, you know.
Well, Dan, we appreciate you coming on and bearing your soul, and it's okay. You didn't do anything wrong.
$350.
Matt Nagy is not going to show up at the post game and ask you questions about what went wrong in your game, so you're good.
But stop lying down on the bench, okay?
I went to the podium last night, and there were no reporters there to ask me questions, so I had nobody to vent to, so I had to do it today. This was much better than talking about soft tissue injuries at OTA. So.
Yes,
thanks for doing that.
That's what we're here for. Dan Weederer of the Tribune and the Take the North podcast.
Yeah, man, that guy brings the juice.
That's right. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Weedsy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.